Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. As you know, this podcast is for the everyday entrepreneur looking to start and grow a business. But there is one more piece to that, and that is the transition from you, the owner, to maybe the generations that are coming behind you, or to individuals that you sell this company to. So you need to build it the right way, and that's why we like to have guests like our next guest come on this podcast and teach you the right way. So the book that we're talking about today is called Lador Vador, and that's a Hebrew way of saying generation to generation. Succession planning in family businesses, owners' practices, and perceptions. And it is an honor to have Dr. looks like PhD, Matthew Kirzner on. So thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Mike. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of this book. I know that before we hit the record button, you had some stats and figures that probably put you in line to actually create this and make others aware of what you've seen and what you've done. So tell us a little bit about the genesis.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thank you. And it's a pleasure to be with you. So I started this actually a journey and wanted to research succession planning because I'm a product of family business, right? My father owned a few pharmacies, a medical supply company, and a vitamin company. And none of the four children wanted to go into the business. And none of us wanted to be pharmacists. So his end up succession plan was a liquidity event in the late 80s. So I watched my father go through talking to somebody like me, figuring out what was the avenue he wanted to take, right? He doesn't have anybody to pass it down to. He didn't want to be there forever. He knew that the market was changing, the landscape was changing. So he decided that he wanted to go through a liquidity event, which really started getting me thinking about this and wanting to study this.
And real before you go further from there, a liquidity event, is that what you called it, right?
Yeah, liquidity event would be selling the business.
Yeah, so is that heartbreaking to see? Tell us a little bit about your perspective and what it was for him.
Yeah, so obviously I looked at it as saving my father's life. My father worked, you know, when you're a family business entrepreneur, and those who are in your audience know, it's not a Monday through Friday 9 to 5. It is wake up to fall down every day. So my father churned and burned. He was an entrepreneur. He knew what he needed to do to grow the business. And he did. He grew the business over, 25 plus years to where he wanted it to be. But yes, when none of his children, and he had conversations with us, none of us wanted the science of pharmacy. We decided that it wasn't for us. So it was not as heartbreaking for us because we knew that we didn't want to have it in it. But I will say for the community that he served, the employees that worked for him for the 20, he had people that worked for him for 25 years. Yes, it was a little bit of a heartbreak not being able to have somebody else take over the business. And he ended up selling the business to a very large food retail operator that actually merged his pharmacy into their pharmacy. It was extremely successful. And to answer your question, it wasn't heartbreaking for us, but for others, it was. Wow. It is an emotional process to think about succession and when you don't have somebody to succeed you. So let me share some stats, right? Because these are important. And when I did my research, getting my PhD and doing this research, the book really came because of these stats and wanting to peel away at the onion and understand what other CEOs went through, right, when they went through a succession plan. And that's how I started this book. So number one, the estimated lifespan of a family business is actually only 24 years.
Wow.
Right. So first generation, right? You don't normally see family businesses going to second or third generation. The statistics go lower and lower on how that works.
Now, we've always heard, just to jump in there, we've always heard the first generation builds it, the second generation grows it, the third generation destroys it. So I guess that's absolutely wrong then, huh?
Well, actually, if it can get to the second generation, yeah, that's the risk, right? Right. But statistics show that usually the owner either doesn't have the confidence in the next generation, number one, or there is no one under the second generation to take it over.
Got
There's
it.
Family members working in the business, but they don't have it in them to lead it or run it. So that's why the average is 24 years, right? One generation. So that's number one. 40% of family business owners expect to retire in the next decade. Think of baby boomers right now.
Yeah.
Right? There's so many baby boomers who are in the retirement age. And actually before COVID, I mean, we talked COVID, whatever, right? But people held off retiring. But now it's starting to move very quickly. The baby boomers are aging and there's not enough skilled labor within their families or in the industry to take over. That's another big piece here. But and think about it. Our economy is made up of 40% of family-owned businesses, right? Not these large, massive companies, but these small to medium-sized companies.
And what you just touched on is there's going to be a major wealth transfer. Either the businesses are going to decrease and just die out on their own, or individuals like myself could scoop in and buy these boring businesses for pennies on the dollar if the timing is right.
We call it a fire sale. You're absolutely right there, Mike. And I'll tell you, think about this now, right? In the next two decades, because of the baby boomers and the circle of life, we're going to see $10.4 trillion transfer from one generation to the next, right? Either through a liquidity event of selling the business, and then that money goes into the estate and then gets down to the next generation that way, or the next generation takes it over and takes the wealth of the business that generates the wealth, right? So $10.4 trillion will be transitioned in the next two decades, next 20 years. And it's already started, right? Because I finished my research 4 or 5 years ago. So we're already in that cycle. So that's 10.4. 35% of Fortune 500 businesses, Fortune 500, are family owned. So remember I told you 40% are family owned, 35% are Fortune 500. These are large organizations, right? So that's another big stat. According to the U.S. Small Business Administration, 90% of all businesses in the U.S. are jointly owned by husbands and wives, right? So you also run into issues that happen in marriages, and what do you do with the business? So that also comes in with succession, and you got to think about those things that when you come into play here. And then the challenge is the person that's leading the company, who's the family the owner, is also a father, a mother, a son. There's a lot of family dynamics that come into play. And, you know, you might have a family member that is working in the business, but are not capable of taking it over. So that's also another important data point here. And then the last piece that I want to share here that really got me interested about succession and studying this is there's a lot of resistance in succession planning, right? A lot of business owners don't want to think about succession. They usually wait to the end or something happens medically to them or mentally happens to them where they're just not capable anymore, but they don't have a succession plan in place. A solid succession plan could take 3 to 5 years to really put a plan in place. And there's some resistance in this because the owner of the company has a very strong bond with the company. There's a reason why they started it. Usually something psychologically when they were younger drove them to want to own something. And it's theirs and they don't want to let it go. So there's a lot of resistance in putting succession planning together. So it's not uncommon for owners to kick the can down the road. And then it's usually too late. And this is where you brought up where you can get it as a fire sale, because it declines because there's no strategic thinking about succession. It's usually, oh my God, I'm either ill and I can't do this anymore, or I don't have enough for retirement anymore and I need to sell the business for the money. There's a lot that comes into play here. But the business owner, for whatever reason, does not want to think about succession and they kick it down the road.
Yeah. And I'm hearing from guys that I work with, they're always looking for what they call boring businesses. And these are businesses that are, you know, time tested, and the owner got to a point where they were okay. Maybe they're 50 years old, 55 years old. They found a way that worked for them and it just stayed there forever. They never looked into SEO or new technology or any type of new program to really amplify their business. And so as time went on, it was so dependent on the owner that the value of the business, that the asset, the entity, actually decreased in value, because when the owner left, it's almost like the soul was ripped out of the company. So they could go in there and, like you said, during a fire sale, pick it up for pennies on the dollar, implement new strategies, and really have it boom. However, the owner does take a hit. And if you build it the right way and have the succession plan in place, I'm assuming you can get top dollar or close to top dollar for that asset. And that's your job, it sounds like.
100%. You're hitting the nail on the head. And this is another scary statistic. This is for more of the small to medium-sized business owners, entrepreneurs. If you speak to them and you do a survey with them, you'll find out that the average savings that they have for retirement is only about $40,000 or $50,000.
Scary.
Because the rest of it is built into the business, the building, the real estate, the inventory, right? Their payroll. They reinvest their money back into the business, and they're entrepreneurs. So they train themselves not to kind of put money away or take money away, but they use it to reinvest in the business. But you just hit the nail on the head. Over time, they're not reinvesting and growing, or what I call look at the organizational health. They just maintain what they have. It starts declining. And then that's when they get really nervous when they finally do speak to someone like myself. And I encourage them to talk to a wealth advisor on what they need to maintain their lifestyle for the remainder of their life. And they realize that the value of the business is not there anymore to get what they need. So it's like having a home, not doing anything on the home. And then when you try to sell the home, the value of the home is not there because you never kept the upkeep.
Yeah. Yeah. And so give us a quick little background on your business. Before we hit the record button, you were saying that you started a business in New England. That's who you served right out of the gate. But this has grown tremendously. And it seems like you have many clients even in Nashville. So who do you work with specifically? And tell us a little bit about the pathway.
Yeah, great question. So first of all, my name of my company is called the New England Center for Family Business Excellence. And I call it the New England Center because I'm from Connecticut, right? So I'm from the New England area. But most of my clients are throughout the United States, all over the place, right? I have clients in Puerto Rico, California, Florida, Texas, Nashville, Maine. Maine's in New England, but you know, I have major clients all over the place, and they range from large family businesses, medium, to small mom and pop entrepreneurial type of environments. Now, what I offer and why I call it a center is because I have a cafeteria of offerings. My background is I'm a business psychologist. So I deal with the emotional side of businesses, right? So the organizational health, not necessarily the employee, that they're important to me, but the actual organization, right? So think of me as like a marriage counselor. What I deal with is the Venn diagram of the ownership, the family, and the business, and how they interact with each other. And I deal with the emotional side of making decisions, conflict resolution, strategy. So out of my center, one of the areas of my center is I have a strategic human resource arm or area. So this is, think of companies can acquire me or bring me on as their fractional chief people officer. A lot of family businesses don't have, they might have an HR person, but not somebody at the level that could be strategic with them, right? To get talent management, performance management, et cetera. I also have a whole assessment center where I can help both individuals and teams on how they interact with each other. So think of like DISC or Myers-Briggs,
yes,
or 360 degree feedback tools. I can help find how people click themselves or how they work together as a team. But in family businesses, you want to make sure you have the right cultural fit of people that work for you that understand the family, understand the ownership and the business, because it's not like working for a organization that's not family owned. It's very unique. So you want to make sure, especially if you're bringing in a CEO that's non-family for the first time, to be a steward while the next generation's getting ready, right? Because they might not be mature enough or old enough to take over the business. So some businesses bring in non-family professionals to run their business until somebody's ready. So I help find that cultural fit. I also have a family governance, I do family advising. So I run retreats with families and business owners and partners on governance, right? What is their mission, vision, values? What are their goals, right? What are they thinking? What is development needed for the next generation, right? Leadership development. So I help build governance. I help build family constitutions. And I run these retreats where we go to Puerto Rico, we go to the Bahamas, we go to nice locations to get them in the mindset of being strategic and developing them. You might have a family business where you have brothers and sisters who started a business, they have children, and now there's cousins involved. Well, there needs to be some governance around there because, you know, cousins are not brothers and sisters, they're cousins. So you have to make sure that they're aligned together. So that's the family business governance side of what I do. Then I can also set up boards like fiduciary boards or advisory boards. So, and I help find people to join boards for family businesses or tightly held businesses. I'm also an executive coach. So I'm classically trained through the Gestalt Institute of Cleveland, and I use all the senses to bring awareness about being somebody who needs to be moving the needle or setting a goal up or making a decision. Could be working with a business owner that needs to decide, what do I do with my business? Do I pass it on or do I sell it? I'm stuck. So I could do some of that strategic planning. Or after I sell it or pass it, what do I do with myself?
Yes.
Right? So that transitional coaching. There's another important part of coaching that I deal with, and that's called grief coaching. And this is not grieving a loved one of someone passing. It's grieving that I just sold my business and I'm grieving that business because I've owned it for 25 or 30 years. It was a child of mine, right? And I just gave it to somebody, either a family member or I sold it. So there's grieving that goes along with selling or succession planning. So I do that. And then the last piece, which is amazing too, is I'm a certified mediator. So think about brother and sister, father and son, father and daughter, the family dynamics. I'm sure you might have siblings. I'm sure you've tussled with them and gotten to arguments. So I work and make sure that grievances don't turn into remembered hurts, right? And you never want to get into legal things with families and family businesses. So I'm a certified mediator where I could sit down and try to find common ground and then try to put an emotional or psychological contract together on how they're going to move forward.
Man, that's interesting. And the way you said that, business psychologists, you don't hear that too often, but I think it's a necessity for sure. This is such a personal development game that the mind is really the driver of everything. And so you have to understand the mind to understand the business. And I think that what you said there with the identity shift that happens when you go to sell the business. Now, people out there, I've analyzed individuals who sold their businesses, right? Millions of dollars. And then they enter a state of depression. Now, you've probably seen this too, but their identity was tied to that business. So when the business goes away, who are they, right? And having the plan in place of the identity you're about to create or the venture you're about to start next is so important. And many people forget about that until it's too late. And I've seen clients go through it and they even coach me on it. Hey, if you ever go to sell your business, make sure you have a plan B, C, D, because we entrepreneurs are born to create. And if you don't have that next mountain to climb, it will be absolutely devastating to you. So that's probably so fascinating that you get to see that and help people through those dark times. It doesn't sound like dark times to the average person, but it absolutely is if you don't know who you are.
100%. And it's no different than losing a loved one. Like I said, grieving. If you don't work through the process of the grieving process and go through all the different steps, right? And then finally get to acceptance, you can get stuck in one of those areas. And yes, and think about it, a serial entrepreneur or an entrepreneur that starts something, you're absolutely right. They could lose their mojo. Or let's use golf as an example. You can get that. What's that? When you swing the club and it goes the wrong way, it gets in your head and you might actually, right? I can't think of the actual term here.
But a shank.
Thank you. Shank.
Get right? A case of the
you
shanks.
You don't even like talking about it, but you get the case of the shanks. And that's the worst thing that can happen to an entrepreneur when they lose their confidence.
Yes.
About making decisions, because an entrepreneur makes a decision to move forward and risk. And they have high risk tolerance. But if they sell and they have regret or they haven't gotten over it yet, right? Or they lose their identity. I like what you said. then it could create the shanks, right? They second guess themselves moving into another opportunity and they can lose it, right? They can lose that opportunity.
Well, you make me think of all the decisions I've made recently of I need to do something now that I know that I can do for as long as I possibly can into my 70s, 80s, and 90s. So I picked up trials riding. Have you ever heard of trials riding?
No, I have to look into that.
So it's basically a certain type of dirt bike riding where you can actually go very slow around obstacles and you don't need to be flying at 80, 90 miles per hour. So you're able to do it at a very, very late stage of your life. And I'm like, wow, I could do that. I can run for as long as I possibly can that God gives me the ability to do so. I could build businesses. So like these hobbies I want to do for the rest of my life. And what happens with business creation, I think that the skills transcend business, but whatever you learn from one business can be applied to another. So it's like a game that never ends, in my opinion. So as long as you have health, I think you can do certain aspects. And as long as you adopt them young enough, maybe you can continue to do them for as long as you possibly can. So anyways, great. You talk a little bit about meeting with individuals and then helping them put together the succession plan and get them maybe to build the company the right way. So recently, I don't know, I would say we're only about a 7 and 8 year old company, but in past 2 years, I've been focusing on building this company to sell. And I tell my team this, and it might make them nervous, but I'm just saying to them, listen, everything we do has to be beyond me. It has to go to somebody else. So I need standard operating procedures. I need certain things in place that make it very scalable. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to say that we're going to build it to sell. Doesn't mean we're going to sell, but by building it to sell makes this an asset that really does kind of take on a life of its own and run without me. So is that very difficult to educate the average person to say, hey, you need to start focusing on building your company to sell, not meaning that you're going to sell tomorrow, but taking your baby and then making it in a way that actually is valuable after you're gone. And then the other aspect is, where do you even start? Because that's a never-ending process, refining and creating all of this structure, almost like a corporation, very time-consuming. So I think there might be a point where it is a little bit too late in somebody's stage of their business development. But where do you start with those? Yeah.
Great question. So I got two things I want to cover with that. First of all, with my book and what I developed through my research is I created what's called the Kirzner stamp. It's an assessment that I work with family business owners on their preparation for succession or growing their business for a liquidity event. Remember, succession could be either passing it on or going through that liquidity event, getting it ready. So what you're bringing up, which is very important, is called the organizational health of the business. So this is looking at business development, operation efficiency, and people, and constantly working those three areas in order to move the business in the direction that the owner desires, which is the growth and the mindset of getting it ready to sell and selling it at the right time, right? And if they don't think about it or work it strategically, then they're constantly, as entrepreneurs, firefighting. And that's where you can lose it, right? And not grow the business and bring value to your internal customers, your employees, and your external customers, your clients. You need both pieces of that formula in order to have the most successful asset, right? And that's my thought process here. So when I use the term organizational health, it is doing strategic thinking and planning. It's first where you said, where do you begin? Well, an entrepreneur really needs to understand their mission, their vision, and their values. Meaning, what is the purpose? What is the results? And what is my deliverables of my business? What do I need to be doing to grow it, right? Why am I in business for? What's the result of why I'm doing this? Is it because I need money in my pocket? Is it because I want to dominate the world? Is it because I want to feed my children? I don't know, right? But that's usually the motivation. So once you understand your mission, your vision, your values, and why you're in business, that's the start of number one. Then you have to start thinking about, okay, what product line or service line do I want to continue growing or being in? That's what we call business development, right? So what is my revenue? Where do I want to be? What's my goal? What, for 2024, 2025, 2026, What do I want to do for business? What business do I need to get out of? Right. You know, I might be working really hard to produce X, Y, and Z widgets, but then I'm bleeding out somewhere else because that product line sucks. And we just don't think about those things. So it's really thinking about where are we today? Well, no, where we were, where we are today, and where we need to be, and knowing how to pivot. So that's what I mean by business development and understanding that. Operation efficiency is what do you do? How do you do things better, faster, and more quality? Right. In the manufacturing world, we call it lean processes, removing the fat, right? Removing waste. Business owners, entrepreneurs sometimes don't think that way. They just do. But you really have to think about how do you do things? How does technology come in? How is AI going to come into play? Mm-hmm. Right. Automation going to come into play. We're dealing with a work shortage right now where if you ask the average entrepreneur out there, what is their biggest headache? They're going to say staffing. They're going to say getting quality people in the door. So how do you operate more efficiently? What can you outsource? What can you produce that will take care of it for you with artificial intelligence? What is it that you can do, right, to bring in better quality? What systems do you need in place, right? Operating systems. Even if you're a small entrepreneur, you should have automation and technology that's supporting you, right? Right. And then the third piece, which to me is really near and dear to my heart as an organizational development and human resource expert, is your people, right? Your staff, continuously developing them and having a mindset of continuous improvement. So leadership development, identifying your high potentials, giving them stretch assignments, right? Making sure you're giving them feedback like a coach, right? Having a coaching mindset. Right. Asking them what's speeding up, what's slowing down, and what obstacles are you facing? If you do that, and you cover those three areas, business development, operation efficiency, and people, boy, does your organizational health grow. But entrepreneurs only stay focused on what they focus in on, which could be the what's happening today. What fires do I need to put out today? Yep. And that's where the organizational health starts declining, right? So you got to constantly look at those things. So I always start by doing a little bit of a pulse check when I'm talking to entrepreneurs. How are you doing in business? What are you doing to grow your business, to do operation efficiency? And more importantly, the most important asset, your people. What are you doing? So I get a little feel of what's going on that. I do it through a discovery process. I ask some questions. And that's what my assessment gets into. My assessment gets into preparation of, let's look at the past. Let's look at your family history. How did you do things and what went well and what didn't go well and what needs to change? We already talked a little bit about mission, vision, and values, but what is the organizational culture, norms that you work around? And if you hire people, are they emulating that for you? Because an entrepreneur might want to focus in a little bit, train people, and then move on to the next thing. Right. And that could be next thing within the business or looking to sell and doing something else. But you need to understand if the people you hire to help you run this current business, are they doing it the way you want to do it? So that's the culture, values, and norms.
Wow.
Mentoring is another huge piece. Right. Are you continuously mentoring the person behind you? So if something, God forbid, happens to you, the business can keep going. What happens if you have a heart attack? What happens if you have a breakdown, you get into a car accident, something happens where you're out of work for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks? Do you have people behind you that can actually keep the business running? That's what I mean by mentoring, right? And continuously growing. And then, you know, I can keep going into this about employee engagement, keeping people motivated, you know, how are you developing people, and clarity of roles and responsibilities. If you know that your focus is to grow this business to someday sell it, then is your role and responsibility to be looking at the landscape all the time of possible opportunities for people to buy it, for possible opportunities for you to keep growing this? So your job should not be in the weeds of the day-to-day operation. Your job and your role as an entrepreneur is what's the next? What's the next big thing? What's the chapter I'm in? So when it comes to succession planning and working with family businesses, you have the owner who also probably is running and rolling up their sleeves and really working this, but they need to step out of their way to say, okay, what's behind those trees, behind the forest? What's a year, 2 years, 3 years look like? And sometimes they can't get out of the day-to-day operations to really think of these things. So my assessment gives a little bit of a gauge where they were, where they are, and where they want to be. And then from there, we develop a plan of all, you know, another whole process for succession.
Got it. And just by looking at your clients, do you notice any type of trend of maybe demographics, whether they're doing 1 to 5 million or 5 to 10 million, that they start thinking about this, or they hit a certain age, or maybe a certain feeling of burnout? And then the other aspect is, maybe what is their biggest fear, that it doesn't live on to their family? And I'm assuming, and this is probably tied together in some aspect, if you don't build the business the right way, you will, number one, burn out. But number two, you will not have an attractive business that others want to take on. The generation behind you doesn't want to be a part of it because they saw how much you worked and the sweat equity involved. They don't see that lifestyle as something that they want. So yeah. I'm assuming all of it is somewhat mixed together, but you probably notice some type of trend amongst your clients. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. So the first one that's hitting me is the word burnout. Right. There's been so much going on in the last 5 years between supply chain issues, between, you know, shutdowns or turnover with employees, right? The great resignation of people coming and going, or just the lack of skill set that's out there that's needed. That makes the entrepreneur burned out because of the stress of all of that stuff going on. So I do see a trend of that. It's not publicly discussed. Trust me when I say this. Right. They're not going to show their cards, but they're questioning themselves all the time. I coach a lot of CEOs and entrepreneurs. So that's number one is burnout. And how do I keep going? They do it. They fake it. They do it. But they're burnt out. Right. They need to sharpen their saw more. And they're not doing it because of other issues that are coming up constantly. I already talked about baby boomers that kind of put a hold on certain things. Because of COVID or supply chain, or the business took a dip in the last few years. Now you're starting to see, because of age, people starting to think about a retirement. The normal retirement of people are what, 65? So you start seeing entrepreneurs, seeing their friends and their peers leaving corporate jobs into retirement. And they start thinking, maybe I should be thinking that way.
Ooh, yeah.
Right? So that's also a trend of my peers around me are moving to Florida, or they're taking extended vacations, their kids are out of the home, and I'm still stuck in my business. And I've grown it to where I need it to be. I'm institutionalized, right? So you see that as a trend as well. And then the last trend is first generation owners. No one could do it like me.
That's probably so common. Yeah, right? I've seen it, man.
Yeah, no one can do it like me. And even if my kids have been working with me, they still aren't. That's where you got into one generation, second generation, third generation. And that's why that statement is there, because the first generation they don't do it like me. They're a carbon copy.
Yeah, I think that, those are the type of businesses that don't really turn into second and third generation, because it's such a hostile environment. And I've seen it firsthand, and it can be scary for another generation to take over whenever it was sort of, there's not that many great memories. It was just a way to make money, and that's it. There's no love behind it. So the people out there who are listening to this, I would think maybe, if they're going to put together any type of plan after listening to this podcast, or maybe get in touch with you directly, is there anything that you would say, hey, start to put together that mission and that vision for everyone to see, so they know the plan of attack for their own lives to see where they fit in there? And then there's one other thing that I want to ask you is that I believe maybe there's a trend of individuals promoting from within. You know, Steve Jobs famously hired the CEO of Pepsi. Hey, do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Or do you want to come and change the world? Well, he came in and then he fired Steve Jobs. Why? Because the culture was really married to Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs, I can't believe he even did this, brought an outsider in, and it changed the environment, changed the entire company. So my assumption is, if I were to really transition my company, to somebody else, I would always promote within. And so maybe if there's anything that you could say whenever it comes to step one, two, or three, or hey, if you're going to think about that next person, here's what I would look for. What would
yeah,
you say?
Great. Yeah, great, great point. So first of all, I think there's five steps that an owner or an entrepreneur should be thinking about early on and just starting to put this together. And number one, and part of finding that internal person is part of these five steps. Number one is, what is their transition and exit strategy, right? So they have to start thinking about, what is my exit here, right? Like you had that thought process, you said earlier, I'm growing this business to sell, right? Not that we're going to sell, but I have that mindset. Yes. So what is my transition and exit mindset? That's number one. They have to think about those. Governance is another one, right? What are the rules, regulations, for my employees, my family, myself, in how I want to continue growing this business? What is the rules, the governance, right? How often am I going to have formal communication with my team? You know, what am I going to share with my board? And a board could be your advisors, right? These are people that are friends, family, attorneys, accountants. I have to have dialogue for them to help me do this. Number three is, what is my growth and value enhancement? That's that strategic planning, right? So actually, I encourage entrepreneurs to take a step back and think a little bit about their growth, right? Their business, their operation efficiency, their people, and get into what we call that strategic mindset, right? Get out of their day-to-day. Number three is, how do we hold each other accountable? As an entrepreneur, how do I hold myself accountable that I'm actually going to work a plan? Right? That I'm actually going to understand the purpose, results, and deliverables, have goals, and work towards them. And then to answer your question, I call it the leadership development. It's identifying, we call it high potentials, right? Who do you have in your organization that actually, if they're non-family, but you treat them like family because, boy, they treat it like their own, right? They don't want to spend the money because they think it's their money. Boy, are these people golden nuggets for your organization. So identifying them, what potential they have, maybe put them through an assessment of their growth potential, right? Because again, you're seeing them behave today in a certain situation, but you can give them stretch assignments and goals to work on and maybe use some assessments to see what their future potential could be. And then from that information, develop a developmental plan to grow them. And then I tell the entrepreneur, go take a lengthy vacation, see how they do, or do a role reversal. Let that person play your role and you play their role for a while to see how their wings expand.
Wow.
And by doing that, it builds trust. And once you start trusting some key employees around you, boy, then you have mini-me's that are mini entrepreneurs that you could go grow your business or do something else, because they got your back. So that's how I'm answering your question.
Man, very, very good points right there. And last two questions I got for you. Are you noticing any type of business having a very difficult time in transitioning as compared to another, whether it's service-related businesses, blue-collar-related businesses, anything struggling right now? Or maybe there's going to be many on the horizon for us listeners actually get involved in?
Yeah. Yeah, great question. First of all, you know, I jokingly say there are going to be certain restaurants that might be a thing of the past. So what I mean by that is, let's use Chinese restaurants or pizza parlors, right? Or, you know, the diners of the world. Remember what I said, 40% of our small businesses, or, you know, 35% of Fortune 500 businesses are family owned, but they might not have children, or they might not have the next generation to take over. So where are they finding the workforce to come in, right? You know, if you don't have a business to pass down to somebody, then you're thinking, when do I sell? I don't even know when to sell. I was just up in the Rochester, New York area working with another client, and I got off the highway and I had dinner at an Italian restaurant. And boy, you could tell it was a family-owned business because of the service level. Because of the, you know, there's something about family businesses that just take it up a notch.
Yep.
And, you know, I wrote on my business card, excellent meal, great service. I can tell this is a family business. not that I wanted them to reach out to me, but I wanted to give them kudos. And, you know, I left a bigger tip and I wrote this note. And I got an email about 2 days later from the owner saying, thank you. I got your business card. I went to your website. I wish you spoke to me because I am 74 years old. I've been in business for 56 years and I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should sell this business. I don't know if I should pass it on to my family. I'm stuck. And I got in at work at 6 a.m. this morning and I was eating dinner at 8:30 at night and left the business card and the owner was still there. So where I'm going with this is, you know, I think the restaurants, the small, you know, mom and pop restaurants that have been around for years that we all love and enjoy, think about this, right? Might be the thing of the past because they end up closing their doors because they don't know what to do.
Yep. I could see
that's what I think is a huge trend that's going to happen.
And how
many Chinese restaurants is another one.
Wow.
Right? I use that as an example.
Oh my God.
Right? Yeah. Next time you go get Chinese, speak to the person behind the counter who owns the company and ask them who's taking over.
It's them, right? That's it. They're workers too. By the way, they are hard workers. Yeah. Do you think they're thinking about succession plans? Absolutely not.
No, they're living the day to day. They're living the day to day.
Wow. Okay, guys, if you're out there, you probably could pick up a restaurant, but maybe that's the thing of the past. That's very that's, you know, restaurants statistics show it's one of the hardest businesses to keep going and keep going. So
that's right.
Amazing. Last question I have for you, outside of your own book, is there one that you recommend? I always talk about Rich Dad Poor Dad. That's the one that set me free. So is there one like that in your life?
Yeah, there is. There's a couple. My number one go-to is Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Classic.
Right? Yep. It's a classic. I always, when I start coaching entrepreneurs, I have them read that because they need to know where their time is being spent and how much energy they're putting in and how do they sharpen their saw so they can keep going. So Seven Habits is my number one. I'm also a recovering judger, right? I'm a very curious person, right? But think about that, right? I'm thinking of starting up Judgers Anonymous. But where I'm going with this, right, is there's a book called Change Your Questions, Change Your World, Change Your Mind, right? I think I'm saying it right. I have it on my bookshelf over here, but it's really about having a good mindset. So it's change your questions, change your world or something like that. Change your mind.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, it sounds like a Dr. Joe Dispenza type philosophy, but yeah, I've heard of that book before.
Yeah, and I got one more that I think is great, and this one is for anybody that wants to take the leap of faith and get out of the 9-to-5 and become an entrepreneur, right? For your listeners, Steve Harvey actually wrote a great book called Jump.
Oh, yeah, there's a great speech of his out there that probably prompted him to write that book. But
exactly.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's really his story about, you know, where he was working as in the car, you know, in the world in Detroit, in the manufacturing world, and, you know, for a large car manufacturer. And all he really wanted to do was be on TV and be a comic. So he had to take that leap of faith. So really, the book is about, it doesn't matter what you do. You could be a barber, a short order cook, a business psychologist, a radio host, right? A podcast host. As long as you have something that you're passionate about, at some point, if you want to have abundance in your world and you want to be the king or queen of your own destiny, then eventually you're going to have to take that leap of faith and jump off the cliff and experience this. And basically what he's saying is the reason why he uses the analogy of jumping off a cliff is because your parachute might not open up quickly. So you're going to get your head banged, your knees scraped, but that's what entrepreneurs do, right? You learn and you grow. But the book was really about taking that leap of faith. And if you're passionate about what you do and you're willing to put the work in, eventually that parachute will open, right? You have to have that faith and knowledge and experience and grit, which is what entrepreneurs have. But some people who have the entrepreneur's spirit are afraid. And the book is talking about, listen, he lived in a car for a year, but then an opportunity came up to go at the Apollo, right? And then have his shot and break. But he was at his wit's end and living in a car at the time, homeless. And we all go through pain and suffering. But if you have the passion and you're willing to take the leap, eventually your parachute will open and you will be successful.
That's right.
So that's one of my go-tos.
Oh.
Whenever I start with people who are thinking of leaving their 9-to-5, and I also help them do that, that's one of my go-to books for them as well.
Not heard of that book. I heard of his speech before, and it's very popular on TikTok. And it's definitely something I promote quite a bit that, you know, if you, and I think he says it in his speech, but the longer you wait on that cliff, you know, fear will just cloud your mind. And then you'll second, you know, guess everything you do in your life. And the longer you stay there, the harder it is to jump. So whenever you have that dream or that inspiration, make it happen, go after it. Because if you fail and you fail if right out of the gate, you'll learn, you'll adjust, and you'll continually move and progress and become stronger. Your skin will become thicker. Ideas will become better. And it's just a thing of momentum that you need to really, really build. And so I'm with you. And I have a philosophy, and it sounds like you share the same sentiment. Think like an entrepreneur, right? We're the dreamers out there taking ideas and bringing them to life. And you adopt these skills that transcend business, your ability to communicate, lead, inspire, manage. And entrepreneurship, it sets people free in many ways, financially, spiritually, mentally.
100%. And I'm there. So
awesome. Well, Dr. Matt, do you prefer doctor? Do you like that? Dr. Matt?
You know what? I earned it, but I actually liked Matt. Right?
Okay.
Matt or Dr. K, whatever, right? Yes. But well, yeah, Matt is fine.
Well, Matthew, I look at your title of your book and I always go off of that. But Matt, is there a website or a social media channel that people can find you on and get in touch?
Yeah, 100%. The best way to get in touch with me is visit my website, which is www.necfbe.org. And they can also go on YouTube. I have my videos from my all the service offerings. I have videos out on my YouTube channel.
Oh, nice.
So they can go and find me. Just put in Matthew Kirzner YouTube and my channel will pop up. Or people can email me, and I'm love to have conversations with people. It's mkerzner.necfbe@gmail.com.
Wow. Okay. And the company, once again, New England Center for Family Business Excellence. Yep. And the book is Lidor Vidor, Generation to Generation, Succession Planning in Family Businesses, Owners' Practices and Perceptions. Matt, thank you so much for being here, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Mike.
Remember, guys, $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.